Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the next installment of the Elmer and TechNet. This net meets every week at 7:30 p.m. We're following the Kabara Weekly Business Net. Elmer is a term used for those that have experience and knowledge within the amateur radio hobby and choose to share that information with those wanting to learn. While we try not to get too deep with the technical aspects of the topics, we are here to discuss that for those that want more information. And please remember, this is not just a newbie net. While newbies are more than welcome, and any question will be answered. There are no stupid questions. We also encourage other operators with experience to hang out, participate, and Elmer others too. We want both questions and answers to make this thing work. This is K1RR. Every week we switch between topics and general questions and answers. Tonight's edition, I think we're going to do general questions and answers. And if not, I have some notes here on building and buying into your first amateur radio station. I know that we just did a long net there and took a lot of check-ins, but it's always fun to see who's participating in the Elmer net tonight. I'm not going to call everyone back in one by one, because we just have that net, but it's fun to get an idea of who's participating in the Elmer net. So, who's ready for the Elmer net?
K7FHX, print. No, I doubled, so I'll try again. K7FHX.
AI7Alpha Oscar, ready for the day.
Kilo Golf 7, Hotel Yankee Alpha, with a question for the net.
Kilo Golf 7, Victor Papa X-ray.
Kilo Echo 7, Yankee Bravo uniform.
The Alpha 7, Victor Foxtrot Quebec.
KD7AAT, we're listening and recording.
All right, sounds like a great group tonight. And remember, we do have an ElmerNet section on the Kabara.org website. You can pull up raw audio. John down there in California records for us most every week. And you can actually go back and play the raw audio from different Elmer nets that we've had. So in case you missed something or didn't get a chance to write something down, you can always see some of the topics and pull the raw audio right off the Kabara.org website. So it sounds like we've got a great group of people participating in the Elmer net this evening. Again, this is K1RR. I did hear one station that had a question right off the bat, and I know that KI7AAOscar also had a question. So let's start with KG7HYA, and then we'll move to KI7AAO. KG7HYA, go ahead with the question.
Well, thank you, Glenn. I'm trying to understand and use the the IRLP system, and I'm having a bit of a struggle understanding the role that the reflector plays in that whole radio repeater node reflector relationship. I wonder if one of the Elmers could give a quick discourse on how to get onto a reflector and what the reflector actually does.
Excellent question, and one I definitely feel comfortable with answering myself. I love IRLP. It's a great aspect of the hobby. Now, what is a reflector itself? What is the hardware? Basically, it's a computer sitting in a data center somewhere with unlimited bandwidth at very, very high speed. that's all a reflector is. There's actually no RF equipment attached to a reflector. The one that we use is actually located up in Anchorage, Alaska. That's the 9075 reflector. So that covers basically what the hardware is. It's a really fast computer at a data center with unlimited bandwidth and very high speed. Does sector do that a node does not? Okay, so when you have a node, it can be a node attached to a repeater. It can be a simplex node just attached to a radio. So with a node, you can make a call to another node anywhere in the world by dialing a four-digit node number. What a reflector does, a node can only call another node. There's only those two nodes connected at the same time. You can't have a three-way call with three different nodes at the same time. It's limited to a node-to-node connection. Now, with a reflector, basically it's a hub for many nodes. So if you and I and John Brown in California and Duff is on the East Coast and we all want to get together and have a conversation at the same time, and we're all using different IRLP nodes, basically we can connect to a reflector, which does exactly that. It reflects all the audio back to each other. My girlfriend's making fun of me because I'm using my hands to talk here. So, in our case, the Cabara system, our node number is 3638. That's our node number. But because we want more than one node to be able to hear us and talk to us at the same time, we connect into a reflector 9075, which is, like I said, up in Anchorage, Alaska. And that way Seattle can call into that reflector, John down in California can call into the reflector, Tony in Kittitas County can call into the reflector. We can all hear and talk to each other because that reflector is receiving whichever node's audio is transmitting, and then reflects that audio back to all the other nodes that want to listen. So basically, a reflector is a hub for many nodes to congregate on, and we can all hear each other. All node numbers have four digits. Reflectors always start with the 9. So there's many reflectors out there. We use, like I said, the Alaska reflector, which is 9070 through 9079. Any node number that starts with a 9 is a reflector. Does that answer your question?
Well, yes, Glenn, it does. If I understand it, then I can set my radio to frequency 147360. And does that automatically put me on to the 3638 node, and do I dial 9075 to hit the reflector?
Well, now, in our case, it's a little bit different because we always want to be linked with Seattle. We used to have a RF link, long hops between Seattle and Spokane. And with the harsh winters that we have around the Pacific Northwest, almost every winter it would take out one or more antennas. So we decided to do full-time internet linking. And thanks to Dave, KL7M, who owns the Alaska reflector, he allows us to be connected to the 9075 reflector 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Seattle is also connected to the reflector 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That way we can always be in touch with Seattle. So anybody else in the world that wants to connect to Cabara just joins the 9075 reflector. We're always there and we're always linked. Now, we don't use our IRLP node like others do, where we can jump around and talk to other people. We stay linked to the reflector full time. Now, there are, and I assume you're in the Spokane area, the greater Spokane area, there are dozens of other nodes around, including our simplex IRLP node, which is node number 3282, located in northwest Spokane. And that one and other IRFP notes around town, you're welcome to use to call whoever you want, basically whenever you want. But with our repeater system, once you're on these repeaters, whatever repeater you're talking on right now, we're always linked to 9075, and we basically only accept the incoming calls. We don't use our node to dial out. Does that answer your question?
That's cleared up a lot of the questions. I'll continue reading about it, and I think I'll be able to do it here. I think I'll be able to make an IRLP contact. Thank you very much for taking the time, Glenn. This is Kilo Golf 7 Hotel Yankee Alpha. I'll be back and listening.
Anytime you have a question about IRLP, that was one of the first thing that I really got involved with was building some nodes and using them and talking all over the world with a handheld from my lazy boy in the front room. So if you ever want a live demonstration or to hear how it works or some assistance making your first call, just give me a shout. I would be happy to walk you through those steps at any time. So yeah, don't be afraid to give me a shout. My call sign again is K1RR, and almost any time in the evening, I've got the radio on in the background there and listening any time after work. So give me a shout. I'd love to be able to help you through that. All right, KI7AAO also had a question there. I didn't catch your name either, so maybe come ahead with your name and your question.
How about the KI7AAO? My name is Jeff, and my question has to do with antennas. One of the first things I want to do with the handheld is get another antenna in the quarter where we live right now. And I've been working at Twin antennas, and my question is, I look at the antenna, the way the antenna conductor in the ground, it looks like a big torch across the coax, and I just wondered if that was right, or if the 50 ohms with the lead-in wires is sufficient to provide a load to the front. Just kind of a little sidebar, I would also recommend that you change IRLP and rearrange everything and call it a mixer.
Hey Jeff, yeah, thanks for the clarification on your name there. Good question. And actually, I'm not very familiar with the Sturgeon antennas. I assume by the name that it kind of relates to a roll-up J-pole. And I know there's a guy that's built quite a few of those and happens to be listening on the system this evening. So I'm gonna turn it over to John, and I'm gonna defer this question and see if John would like to answer. 27AAT from K1RR. Are you still there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here, Glenn. I'm sorry, I did not catch the question from Jeff. I was trying to fill in his database info and doing a couple other things. What was the question again?
The question once again, Jeff.
The question is on a slim gem or a J-pole, and specifically a slim gem antenna. It looks as though the coax is a dead short on the base of the antenna. It looks like the copper tube will go from the semiconductor to the ground and provide a dead short. And I was just wondering if the coax, the female coax, is enough load or how this thing works, because I'm still using the dipole antenna, you know, where the coax has a distinct left side and right side.
Mm-hmm.
for both you, Jeff, and Glenn. You know, I've got so much white noise coming off of his signal. You know, I heard him talking about Slim Jims and J-poles and the coax connecting, but I really did not, I was not quite able to get all of that in there. There's a lot of white noise coming through the signal, especially from his tonight. I've got him up on QRZ, but I don't have an email address, and if I did, I could send him a couple of documents that would give him all the information that he's looking for. Unfortunately, he doesn't have the email address. If you can get that from him, Glenn, I may not be able to copy it, and maybe we can help him out on that. The Slim Jim I am not familiar with. I know it's very similar to a J-pole, but with all the white noise in there this evening, I wasn't quite able to copy everything he was asking. Maybe you can help him out from that end. Katie, 7AAT.
Know when they first take a look at a J-pole, or a Slim Jim, or any kind of antenna, why does this thing work when it's got a dead short?
Why does it work when it looks like it's a direct short? I don't know antenna theory. All I know is I can put one together in a flat match. I don't know why.
The same thing from time to time, especially looking at the J-poles. I've seen the Slim Jims in lots of the same way. But yeah, you're popping over your semiconductor goes to one spot on an antenna, your ground or the outside shape goes to a different part of the antenna, and you look at this thing and you think, it's got a dead short in it. How does this thing work? I tell you, one of the most fun things to do is to come out to our camp out during the summertime. I don't have the date and time right in front of me right now. I think it's the third weekend of June. And a guy, M7GV, comes down from Canada each and every year, and he throws the J-pole right in front of us. It takes him about, I don't know, 8 minutes, 10 minutes to throw one. Gets it all set up, puts a long lead of coax on it, coax connector, everything on it, right in front of us, and then he gives it away to one of the hams that are watching his seminar or his project. And we've all learned the same thing. You take a look at one of these antennas and it just doesn't make sense. It looks like you've got a direct short, because if you follow the metal through from the positive to the negative, it just looks like it's got a direct short. Oh, geez, that radio's on. Anyway, see, the directions that you see on the internet for J-pole or Slim Jim, they work great. So, even if it's pretty fascinating that it looks like it's the internet, when you put it next to the specs, it can turn out just fine. Does that answer your question, Jeff?
I can answer his question.
John, does that answer the question?
Yes.
Affirmative. I'm just going to go with the plan and put one up and hopefully get rid of the white noise. But what I've read on the flip trip on the blue pole is quite a bit of a difference.
I want a very, very good antenna, so I went out and bought a commercial grade aluminum 2 meter antenna. I think it was a Hustler brand, and I ran that for a long time. And it was good, it really did. But when John KD780T down there in California, him and I built my first J pole, and when I finally got it up on the roof in the same spot that commercial antenna was, I noticed that my J-pole, that amazing J-pole that we built for, I don't know, $3 or $4 worth of parts, because I know a guy that's in the scrap business, we built with that scrap copper tubing, and $3 or $4 worth of parts, and it probably took us a half an hour because we were joking and laughing and having a really good time. That thing, my J-pole outperformed my commercial Hustler antenna. Big time. It was just amazing how much more clear I could receive repeaters around the area. So I definitely recommend building one before buying one. So good enough with that. If you need any plans, feel free to email John. He's got tons and tons of plans for 2 meter 440 J poles and roll up pocket J poles, roll up J poles. Yeah, about anything that you can imagine. His call sign, his email address is his call sign, KD780T@charter.net. So Kilo Delta 7, Alpha Tango, at charter.net. Back to you, Jeff.
Roger, thank you for that information. I got it down.
And I have a related comment.
Since we're turning into blue miles yet, a related comment always has something different. Go ahead, guys.
That is also a TC short, but it's a nice resonant antenna that's used quite a bit on HF, but you also see loop antennas on the back of the old TV sets. Remember the old TV sets? You'd have a little loop antenna for the UHF. Well, that's a direct TC short, but it's a resonant antenna with an inductive resistance to it that's resonant on the UHF net. So you'll see loop antennas quite a bit. People wonder why they work. It's a direct short. It is on DC, but not on the RF frequency. This is W7.
Appreciate you hanging around. When it comes to antennas, you are far more well-versed than I am. So thanks for hanging around, and thanks to John Boyer down there in California also for wanting to help a newcomer along with an antenna project. So thanks to both of you. All right, Eden 1 here on the West Coast. Let's see if we have any other questions for the Elmer and TechNet this evening.
ZFQ, question of that. Tuners and antenna analyzers, what is the difference?
Well, good question, and I'm glad
John is hanging around here this evening because he can probably fill you in. I may not know all the answers when it comes to tuners. An antenna analyzer is a device that you plug your coax into and you fire it up and it gives you most of them. At least Jeff's fancy one, Jeff's got a Ukrainian brand, I can't remember the name of the brand of it, but it, you don't use your radio with it at all. You just hook it up to your coax and your antenna hooks up at the other end of the coax. You press some buttons and it gives you the full readout for the whole band of what your SWR is. It analyzes an entire band. They make them from UHF, UHF, HF, probably SHF, you name it. But basically it gives you a readout of what your antenna, how your performance is and what the match is throughout the whole band or any particular frequency. Now I assume that there's going to be some better than others when it comes to giving you a readout. With Jeff's Ukrainian brand, you can actually put it into your computer and get the little graph printed of exactly what your performance of your antenna is right there from the device plugged into the computer. Now, a tuner is to help match, the mismatch between the resonant frequency of your antenna and the frequency that you're transmitting on. And if I remember correctly, and John will probably come in and correct me if I'm wrong here, and a tuner will help you shorten the antenna. It can't make your antenna any longer per se, but if you have an antenna that's cut for the 20 meter band, if you cut it for the top of the band, basically the length is cut for the top of the band, your tuner will help reduce the antenna size or take and even out to set your match to 1 to 1 by tricking the radio or tricking the, I don't know, let me turn it over to John on this one. I don't know if I can explain it without confusing people. W7O, you want to give us a technical description of how the tuner works?
I thought it was the type of fish that varied in scales. Well, antenna tuner can actually effectively lengthen or shorten the antenna. What happens when you have a high SWR or a mismatch, your piece at the base of the antenna is different from 52 ohms, which is the natural impedance of your radio. So what the antenna tuner does is it matches the impedance coming out of your antenna, which might be 13 ohms or 180 ohms, and it allows you to match it to your radio, which is usually about 50 to 52 ohms. And so the SWR next to your radio is 1 to 1 if you do it right. To most effectively use a tuner, and hardly anybody does it, you want to have the tuner at the base of your antenna, because a high SWR results in significant line losses, and the higher the frequency, the more significant. And so if you reduce the line losses, if you do match the impedance at the base of the antenna, then you don't have the line losses due to the high SWR going through the long piece of coax. If you do it by your radio, then you've got a long piece of coax with line losses, and the high SWR results in a lot of loss. So some people actually put antenna tuners at the base of their antennas and do it that way, but it's usually pretty inconvenient. Anyway, that's how it works. B708.
Okay, so back to the basics. So an SWR, excuse me, an SWR, where am I going? A antenna analyzer, you do not have your radio in line whatsoever. You plug in your antenna and the coax to it, and it gives you a range, shows you what your performance is of your antenna throughout the whole band. A tuner is used in line. Now, like John said, some people, like myself, use it
straight coming out of the back of the radio. There's a 2-foot piece of coax that comes out of the back of my HF rig and plugs into the tuner. Then there's another coax leaf that comes out of the back of the tuner that goes to your antenna. Mine is inside the house because it's convenient for operation. The more effective way of doing it is having a tuner outside, so it's a very short run of coax between the tuner and the antenna. But the tuner is used in line while you're transmitting to shorten or lengthen magically your antenna to get the impedance to match what the impedance of your radio is. Does that answer your question, Jim?
Yes, that has got my mind rolling down the right direction, so... It's one of those things, you don't just buy a radio and an antenna. You have to have some additional equipment, obviously. So trying to figure out which one to invest in first after the radio. So good answer. Thanks a lot.
KD7AAT comment.
John, we'll get you a comment here in a second. I want to throw one more quick thing in there for Jim. You can pop or flip your antennas to a specific frequency. So if you know that you're going to be on 14.300, the 20-meter band only, you can actually cut a dipole or build a dipole specifically for that frequency. Now, if you use an SWR meter or an antenna analyzer, particular antenna. Now when you start to go up the band or down the band, 14.350 or 14.225, your SWR will start increasing no matter which direction you go when you start going off that particular frequency. So some antennas you will see that they advertise middle tuner required. Well, that might be true to a certain point, but you start going off one way or another from the center of the band or whatever the dipole or other antenna is cut for, you will eventually need a tuner to get your impedance to match up. But some radios have built-in tuners. You can click a button and it automatically selects it. There are automatic tuners. You've got to also take into consideration how much power you're putting to it. Tuners can only handle so much power. So you'll notice that the automatic antenna tuners are a little more expensive than the manual tuners, but if you're using full legal limit on HF, an automatic antenna tuner is pretty spendy. So you might think about using a manual antenna tuner where you have to actually spin the dials yourself. But you can use HF antennas if you know what the SWR is without a tuner. So it's not required, but you'll find that eventually it's going to be a necessity, especially if you're playing on multiple bands and multiple frequencies. With that, I'm going to turn it over to John Boy, KD7AAT from K1RR.
Now, thanks, Glenn. And the one thing that you did say was what I was going to mention. There are many... desktop HF type radios that have the built-in antenna tuner in them. They are only good to a certain point, and it depends always on what kind of antenna you have. Even a multi-band antenna can only be tuned, like Glenn said, pretty much a lot of times the center of the band. You start tuning up and down, and you're either automatic or especially a radio that's got a built-in antenna can only handle so much of it. And then there's the power issue. For instance, I have a 500-watt amplifier, but the antenna tuner that I have is only capable of 300. So I can't crank up the foot warmer all the way because the antenna tuner, roller inductor type, won't handle it. but in combination with it and the antenna tuner on my 9100, I can get my multi-band dipole flat match all the way across the whole HF bands. The other one thing to mention is a lot of radios are built in with a safety feature. If you get outside of a real high SWR, I think, Glenn, you probably know what the number is, 4 or 5 to 1, the radio itself will start kicking down power so you won't blow it up. And you'll still be getting out and putting out a signal, but your power will be cut way down just to protect the finals and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, there's a lot of different combinations when it comes to SWR. And no matter what you do, you always want to have a meter or a way to check an the analyzer, like there's the difference there. The analyzer will tell you what the antenna does, but it won't tell you what your match is with the radio coax and so on and so forth, depending on how it's all hooked up. And there are the remote antenna tuners, like John was saying, that go at the base of your antenna, and then you can adjust them from inside your shack. There's a lot of ways to do it, but the number one thing is the flatter the SWR, the more power you got going out on the antenna. KD7AAT.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks, John. I'm going to send it back over to Jim and see if he has anything else to add or clarify.
Very informative. Great on everybody's part. I appreciate everyone's input. I had some confusion, but the B7.
The next thing to do, I think, would be just go look up what an antenna analyzer looks like. You'll get a good feel for what they do. Like I said, you don't hook those up at all in line with your radio. In fact, if you do, you'll blow it up. But so an antenna analyzer, especially if you're into home brewing antennas, that's definitely a must for the shack. You know, they can be kind of spendy depending upon, you know, what brand and what model you get. But they're a requirement for the shack, especially if you're into homebrewing antennas. And if you you don't buy one, you just got to become really, really good friends with Jeff, KG7HDD. We borrow his all the time. His is a really, really cool setup, so you can ask him what model he's playing with over there. And a tuner is, especially if you get into HF and multiple antennas on HF and or multi-band antennas, then the tuner is going to be a requirement for you there. So yeah, excellent question. Thanks for giving us a topic to play with this evening. All right, any other questions for the Elmer and TechNet this evening?
KT7HDD with a comment.
Point of information, yes, I own a Rig Expert. It's a Rig Expert, and it's a, are you going to make me look at it now? Stand by. Yeah, it sits right behind me here in the shack. It's an A, and Glenn said they are built in the Ukraine. Had one little service problem with it, and it was taking by some folks in Canada who service them, There are lots of different antennas out there. I have to tell you, it sure makes your job easy to have that that kind of a tool in front of you. And it's just real handy to let you know what's going on with the antenna. And so, yeah, Rig Expert is the brand. This is KG7HD. Thanks, Glenn.
Thanks, Jeff. You're getting into the 3.8 just fine, but from the 3.8 to the hub and through the 3.6 and the rest of the system, a little bit scratchy and broken up throughout that. So I'm going to repeat that so everybody knows. Jeff just came on with a comment and said that his antenna analyzer is called a Rig Expert, R-I-G, Rig Expert. And it's made by some folks in the Ukraine. He did have one small problem with it, but was able to have it quickly resolved and fixed by some folks in Canada. And he's very happy with it. It's a really cool analyzer. There's some mechanical ones that just have an SWR meter and an ohm meter. Tells you your match with just an analog meter on the front of it. And there's the kind like he has, the Rig Expert, which gives you an actual digital readout and scans the whole band and gives you a line graph that shows you the performance of your antenna throughout the entire band or band. So Rig Expert is the name of his. Thanks, Jeff. Good to hear you this evening. K1RR here. Any other questions or comments for the Tech and ElmerNet or Elmer and TechNet this evening?
Yes, I have a kind of general question about your carrier system. Why do some computers require that?
Jeff, there was a question in case. Actually, I should switch over to the other repeater. Hold on. We have some icing issues. I would assume that there's some ice balls as opposed to space balls. Ice balls up on the antennas, either Stensgar or Mica Peak, so we're kind of having. Your light noise isn't really coming from you so much, Jeff, as it is through the rest of the system when we're listening on a different repeater. Why do repeaters for some require CT, CSS tones, or subaudible tones, also known as PL tones, and others don't? Well, that's a good question. If a repeater is placed at a site that is very noisy, it's suggested that it uses a PL tone. That way, if there's lots of RF interference or RFI on the site, the repeater won't actually be keyed up unless it has that one particular subaudible tone. That way, there's no accidental, you know, you could have somebody talking on 147.9.90, and it won't key up the repeater on 147.980 unless it has that subaudible tone. So even though they're really, really, really close in frequency, there won't be any interference from another machine or other frequencies unless it has that one particular subaudible tone. Now, I think long before my day, Motorola came out with their patented PL tone, which stands for private line. Back in the old days, you used to be able to basically make your repeater inaccessible to everyone else by having a secret subaudible tone, and it would keep people off of your repeater. Of course, nowadays, we all have radios with tone scan functions in them, so if you need to know what the tone is, you can just put your radio into tone scan and
pick up the subaudible tone within a matter of seconds. So the whole PL tone or private line tone kind of went out the window. But that's the reason for subaudible tone. Back to you, Jeff. Even I sit back, and of course I'm not real big into building a whole bunch of antennas. I've done a few from here and there, time to time. It's something I definitely want to learn more about. But some of them I just take a step back and scratch my head and think, how does this thing work? But definitely a lot of fun. And sure, fun having you on the ElmerNet this evening. Keep the questions coming. This is the whole reason why we're here. So the more questions you think of, the happier we are. Thanks again, Jeff. Good to have you on the net this evening. All right, K1RR is my call sign. Any other questions or comments for the ElmerNet this evening? Question or comment?
Well, not so much an Elmer question, although my current activity is serving as an Elmer. On the 3.8 machine, I noticed, I think it was you or somebody else, you were just mentioning tone scan, and I was just tone scanning, trying to figure out the tone for the 3.8 machine. And I saw it listed in the repeater book, but I tried it last night and it did not work. Trying to set up a rig for another relatively new ham.
Well, the 3.8 requires no tone. No tone is required. Actually, none of our repeaters requires a tone. Our linking system has tones for different link frequencies, but we don't really publish those. There are different lengths to look out to stems in between the Stemsgar, Mike Peak, Stemsgar and IRLP, Stemsgar and Walla Walla and Elk Butte and Kamiak, and those do require a tone. If you ever want to play around with link frequencies, I can go over those with you. But none of our repeaters actually require a tone, except for the 6-meter repeater at Kamiak Butte requires the tone. Our Simplex IRLP node in Northwest Spokane requires a 100 Hz tone. And I know that the machine that I built for Elk Butte puts out a subaudible tone when it's transmitting, but does not require one on the input.
Alrighty, well, thank you for that. I'm still got me a little perplexed because I'm on the flatland in Post Falls, and with 5 watts and 10 watts through a 16 watt full size base antenna, I should be able to pound 3.8, and I couldn't even bring it up last night.
Comment AAT.
Well, it's location. The 3.8 is a tricky one to get into. It's got a lot of shadowed areas. When we're working on the 3.8 machine, if you're standing right under the antenna, it works fine. You drive about a mile and a half down the road past Windy Point, and you can't hit the repeater at all. It's just the shaded areas and makes it tricky to get into. Of course, when we have inversions or tropospheric ducting activity, then it's super easy to get into the repeater from just about anywhere. But location.
Yeah, very good. And yeah, that may have been the case because the you know, as you were just talking, I was flipping back and forth between 36 and 38, and yeah, 38 at my location is bearing 30 degrees, so that's probably explaining it. And as I drive around Spokane and Eastern Washington, I do encounter that regularly. So anyway, thanks for the explanation. I sure appreciate it. I'll let it roll. K1RR, KC7DFD.
Yeah, 7-3 as well, and have a good evening there. Thanks for the question. Like I said, we try not to get too deep into the technical aspects of the hobby, but if we can and if there's a question, I enjoy dealing with those as well. They're a lot of fun, so I hope it answered your question, and thanks for participating in the Elmer TechNet here this evening. K1RR is A28. Let's see if we have any other questions or comments for the net. I can tell you that you got a reason why a lot of people don't play with ladder lines is the piece of it, I think, is 75 pole, if I'm not mistaken. Now, if you look up the plans for the antenna, they call the G5RZ, which is an HF antenna. It does use ladder line as part of the feed line, which is kind of interesting. But the way the antenna is built, it's made for the 75 ohm ladder line. Go ahead with your question one more time. I'll see if we can turn up the volume here and get a better copy on you.
Any metallic object, it doesn't work very well, so you can't have it connected to a metal mast or anything like that. You got to have spacers for that. I've never actually used an antenna with ladder line except TV antennas and put those spacers to run them down the side of the house and work fine, but very low loss on ladder line, so yeah, that's why the G5RV works so well with ladder line, because it has a real high SWR, but the ladder line, you don't have the loss that you get with the high SWR, so it works pretty well. Maybe 7 weeks.
Well, hey, Sean. Good to hear that you haven't fallen asleep yet. Back to you, Jeff, for that answer your question.
Yeah, that is great.
All right, yeah, excellent question, and one that I wasn't very comfortable with answering, other than knowing the difference in ohmages or impedance. All right, 8:33 here. Any other questions or comments for the ElmerNet this evening?
AAT. Sorry, Glenn.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, there's one thing that I wanted to point out on the earlier conversation about PL tones and repeaters, and one of the things you hit on really good was location, location, location. Even though a repeater does not need a PL or sub-audible tone, it doesn't matter if you're throwing one in your signal or not. One of the confusing things can be sometimes you can actually not being able to hit the repeater because of your location and thinking that you have the wrong PL tone in your radio, where actually the PL tone doesn't matter if the repeater didn't need one to start with. You just may not be able to hit the repeater, and what you're thinking is you don't have the PL tone in correctly. And there are some bogus informations out there on the internet, and I do believe that some of the old databases do show the Kabar system, maybe the 3.8 or one of the repeaters requires a tone. I think I came across that some time back. Like you said, no tones needed, but even if you throw one at it, 127.3, it's not going to matter. But you may not be able to hit the repeater anyway, but you thought you had the wrong tone in. So sometimes that can be a little bit on the confusing side. KD7AAT.
MK1RR. Yeah, one of the big mistakes that I tried to make as a newbie repeater owner was, why can't we put out 40 watts or 100 watts on the 3.6 machine if it reaches Moses Lake from Stensgar Mountain just fine? It'll reach even farther with 100 watts. And Mark and John were quick to correct me that you don't want to do that. Because, yeah, you can reach halfway to Seattle with 100 watts at 6,000 foot elevation. But then you, as a repeater owner, get the often heard complaint that I can hear the repeater just fine, I just can't get into it. There's something wrong with your repeater. You know, you're walking around your house with a handheld radio and a rubber duck, and we have 100 watts at 6,000 foot elevation. It's not my end that's the problem, it's your end. So, yeah, believe it or not, the last time that we measured the wattage out of the 3.6 machine, it is producing 11 watts, and it's got the heck of a footprint. So, elevation, 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 location, 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 and antennas.
you can, it's amazing to watch the guys that are into QRP, which stands for low power operation. But they'll be running on half a watt, 500 milliwatts, and talking, you know, quite literally halfway around the world, direct on HF. And, you know, you have just a very small amount of power with a great antenna system, and you can literally work world. Of course, guys like John and myself think that there's life's too short for a QRP, and if you have a decent antenna system and you throw 1,500 watts at it, you do the same thing a lot quicker. So yeah, good point there, John, that you made about the repeater and the PL tone. And location, location, location. All right, K1RR here. Any other questions or comments for the net?
Should you have a comment about PL tones or BTSS tones?
I feel a joke coming on, but I could be wrong. Go ahead, John.
He's a joke. The speakers actually have a PL tone on the output, which is the case on your linking repeater 3.9. It doesn't have a tone unless something activates the input of that repeater, and then it generates the tone. So that way you can tone as well to the other end, and you don't have to wait for the repeater tail to drop out. But also, there's a PL tone on the output of the repeater, and squelch in their radios, and they don't give it to the repeater on the frequency until the repeater sees up and opens the squelch on the radio, and it works fine. I think the 147.4. Or has had it. And it's a neat feature because when you're driving around, you know, you can pick up inner noise and a bunch of crap, especially in big cities. Tone on the output. You don't pick that up unless the repeater's test in W7 a week.
The laptop into the repeater to find out what the tone is, unless I just did a tone scan. But I set up the Elk Butte repeater to do the same thing, the 145.190. Puts the tone out on the output, however, it does not require one on the input. Actually, I have to get more hardware for the repeater, actually a tone board, to make that repeater require a tone on the input. But it will put one on the output, but setting it up through the programming table. So it was a good feature and a good point as well. Thanks for that, John. That's awesome. And I know there's a lot of static and garbage between the links, but John was talking about some repeaters put a tone on the output, and you can tone sculpt your radio. That way, if you get a bunch of noise or garbage coming through, your radio only starts playing the audio out when it's keyed up and receiving the sub-audible tone, which will eliminate a lot of noise and interference between the repeater and your radio. So I thought I'd bring that comment over to this repeater so everybody can hear it without the static. All right, any other questions here for the Elmer TechNet?
KE7GFC returning another question.
Okay, go ahead with your question or comment.
You were mentioning the power output on the 3.6 and footprints and so forth.
That's an interesting question. Do you happen to know what's the beam width on that antenna you got there?
I missed it. Talk about the 3.6, and what is the... I missed the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't clear enough. The beam width on the antenna.
The beam width. So, I guess I'm lost. So you're assuming that we're using a Yagi, is that correct? It's an omnidirectional.
Yeah, affirmative. But the vertical beam width, like a station master with like a 8-degree beam width, or another antenna with say a 40-degree, meaning you know plus or minus 20 degrees from perpendicular from horizontal.
I have never climbed up the tower to even see what the antenna is up there. I don't know if John has any more information that he would want to throw in there. Him and I co-own that particular machine together, but I'll bet you a dollar he's never been up the tower either.
It's a 60 dB gain antenna, and I'm not sure what the beam width would be. And of course, the beam width is depending on minus 3 dB or minus 6 dB from maximum signal, so I'm not sure what the beam width is, but it's a 6 dB gain antenna. So if you look at the radiation pattern on a vertical, a collinear vertical, which that antenna is, flattened the signal like a pancake. So it is omnidirectional, but there is a flattened beam. I guess I can calculate the beam width based on the 60 dB gain. Or you can do that. But, so we're putting 11 watts out of the duplexer, out of the receiver, complete out of the duplexer, to 5 watts, old line, so let's say 0 gain, is like, five is 10 watts, that's 3. Another 3 gets us to 20 watts, so it's the other 20 watts. So, but I can't tell you what the beam width is, but I can tell you the dB gain. I'd have to calculate the beam width minus 6 dB to give you that figure. W708.
Okay, I copied some of that. Yeah, this is breaking up quite a bit. But okay, understood. I just asked in case you knew what it was. Yeah, I was involved with work on the cars, 98 machine, and we intentionally went with a broader beam width antenna to take down closer to the hills and so forth, as people requested it, essentially. But, so yeah, I was curious as to what the pattern might be close in, is kind of what I was after. But thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I didn't even know what antenna, like I said, it's way up there. Too far for a guy that's scared of heights to be up there playing with it, that's for sure. And thanks for the answer and input there, John, as well. Any other questions for Elmer TechNet here this evening?
4-1 down, KG7 GPM.
All right, Mr. Mike in Coeur d'Alene, welcome to the net.
It's been pretty interesting so far, and the question I have is, I saw a write-up, just a quick blurb about receiving SDR radio on a Raspberry Pi and then transmitting with the Raspberry Pi. And I was wondering if anybody knew anything about that and what program I could use to receive my SDR.
Yeah, I wonder if Evan is still listening. KG7WPM, are you still listening here this evening? This is K1RR. Evan was still listening, Mike, but I'm not hearing a response from him. I know very little about SDR. I've read, done some research about the Flex radio systems, SDRs. We've even had someone bring an SDR receiver in for at breakfast at where we get together on Saturday mornings. And I think it was just an SDR receiver, if I remember correctly. But I know nothing about SDR and the Raspberry Pi, so I'll take a second, see if anybody else wants to jump in there with a comment or an answer. Other than that, I'm the wrong guy for that topic. We'll stand by here.
Yeah?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, KU7DFD again. Howdy, Mike. Yeah, I haven't actually tried to mess around with the Pi on an SDR. I would hope you would be trying to use a Pi 2 because I wouldn't try and do it on anything less. One of the things that I have struggled with as well is that SDR Sharp doesn't come in Linux flavor, and so I would probably try building it from new radio, you know, Golf November Uniform Radio. And I'd try that way, Mike. KE7DFT.
Go ahead there, Mike.
Caught some of that. It was real hard to hear from me. But I believe he said the SDR, the Sharp program comes in a Linux version. So I'll check that out and see what I could find. And yes, I am using a Raspberry Pi 2.
Okay, negative. As far as I know, SDR Sharp does not come in Linux. So you would have to use new radio, GNU, Golf November Uniform radio program to try and build. That's what I was going to try.
I got it that time. Okay, I'll see what I can find out and do some research on it and see what I can find out. It's KG7GPM. I'm back quiet.
KG7DFC. I couldn't resist. I thought I could provide a piece of information. So anyway, I'll let you guys roll. K1RR and W7OE, thank you very much for the information. And thanks for doing this, Elmernet. Heck, if you're guys around, I'll try and steer more people your way. KE7DFT.
Thanks for being here this evening. Yeah, we just started this listing a couple months ago now, and other Elmer TechNets never really took off, but I kind of wanted to try it again. We had a lot of new amateurs coming to the system and a lot of questions I heard throughout the day, so we just kind of made a time Wednesday evenings after the regular 7 o'clock net, so we usually get started about 7:30 or so. And it's been a lot of fun. Like I said, the raw audio gets posted on the Kabara website. Pictures, if we have a topic of, you know,
anything that we're doing and pictures or notes, we type up and put them on the Kibara website as well. So it's been a lot of fun. So thank you guys for participating here this evening. Like I said, we need questions and answers to make this work, and I definitely do not have all the answers. So thanks to everyone for sticking around here this evening and asking the questions and giving the answers. This is K1RR. Any other questions or comments for the net this evening?
KG7DPX with a probably huge question.
Okay, I copied VPX. Dennis, who is the other station?
Sorry, I stepped on Dennis. This is Kilo Golf 7 Sierra Juliet Romeo. Over.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, we got you in there. It just happened to key up at the same time, and for some reason, Dennis beat you out. Dennis says it's probably going to be an easy question or easy answer. So we'll start with Dennis first, and then we'll go back to you, Bill. Go ahead, Dennis.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, I guess my easy question or answer possibly is I just got a mobile radio a few weeks ago, and I'm just wondering, you know, philosophically, how much power do people typically run when they're mobile? Do you try to keep to a lower power level, or do you just run it flat out in order to ensure that you're at least trying to get into the repeater wherever you happen to be at whatever, you know, moment in time? So I guess, yes, you know, do you just run, you know, max power or something less typically?
Comment?
Well, before we take the comment, I got to go on with my joke. This has been my joke ever since I became an amateur. And if you're a Back to the Future fan, you'll understand. You always run 1.21 gigawatts. Yeah, okay. I'll send it over to the comment first, and then I'll throw my 2 cents in. To the comment, go ahead.
But do you remember what time it was on the clock when he did that? Anyway, this is Telegraph 7 STR. You know, going back to your technician's license, on the serious side here, you operate at the minimum power required to get into whatever the repeater is, or whether or not you're operating simplex. And so always operate on the minimum power required, and that just takes a test of your radio.
And I also agree with that. We try to run the minimum power required, although a lot of us get on HF, and we swear that it always requires 1300 or 1500 watts to make the QSO. Usually what I do if I'm cruising around, I set it at 20 watts, especially if I'm mobile, I'll set mine at 20 watts, and if I'm getting in just fine, then I'll back the power down from there. If I am in a town that I don't know the repeater system or don't know the locations or whatever, I find myself guilty of putting out full power, and when I find that I finally hit the repeater and I strike up a conversation, as I am talking, I back the power down to minimal to make the contact. That's how I do it, to try to keep with the amateur's creed of using the minimum amount of power as possible to complete the contact. So that's how I do it, my personal choice of how to do it. Back to you there, Dennis.
Okay, yeah, thanks. That's kind of, you know, what I've been kind of going for is keep it pretty reasonable. But depending on where I am, I guess part of it is just knowing where you're at and getting familiar with how well you're able to get into a repeater at any particular location. So, I'll keep that in mind. I may probably program my memories for like 25 watts, which is sort of the medium power, and Yeah, I think that might be the way to go. All right, thanks for the answer. This is KG7 DPS.
Empirical comment.
An empirical comment. I don't understand big words. Go ahead.
I couldn't resist KG7 DFC. In my experience, limited, others have had great deal more experience than I, but in driving all over, eastern Washington and north Idaho, I found that 5 to 10 watts through a decent antenna between 3 and 6 dB gain mobile usually does the trick, probably 75% of the time, depending on how far you're trying to go. I've never really had to, go more than about 20 watts. I've only had to crank it up to 50 or 75, trying to do simplex over, 35 miles or so. The minimum power required. If you've got a 5 or 10 watt setting, you might think about that too, because most of the repeaters, unless you're going to go way out, most of your repeaters will be just fine with that. That's just my experience. KG7 DFC.
Yep, great information there, and I concur with your ideas and how you do it. A lot of people, of course, maybe a little quarter wave mag mount or something may require a little bit more than somebody with a different antenna setup. Yeah, part of it, I think the best way to do it is just get some experience. You'll know, I know when I'm in town, especially the 3.6 and the 3.8, which one I should be at when I'm on the east side of town versus the west side of town, or the north side versus the south side, and you'll get a feel for which repeater and what the power requirement is going to be for that particular area. So just get some experience under your belt and enjoy mobile radios. They're a lot of fun, and for those of you that want to play around with mobile HF, that is a load of fun too. I can't think of any more fun ways to pass the time between a long drive than getting on a few nets on HF and mobiling along, and you make a few QSOs here, a few QSOs there, check into a couple of nets, and before you know it, you're in downtown Seattle. It's just amazing. So for those that like mobile radios, I definitely encourage you to check out mobile HF. It's definitely a lot of fun. Thanks, everyone, for your advice on power settings for mobile communication. Let's go back to Bill, KG7SJR, with a question for the net.
Hey, actually, it was just the comment about the power situation, Glenn. But I would be curious about what kind of antenna you're running for HF mobile. I just happened to hop out here to the shack and turn the radio on. What are you running for HF mobile antenna?
Well, it's pretty embarrassing to say, but a lot of times I have better luck with 100 watts and my mobile rig than I do an off-center fed dipole up on the south hill of Spokane. Pretty embarrassing. But I have really, really good luck with ham sticks. H-A-M sticks. Ham sticks. And the downfall to a ham stick mobile HF antenna is that you have to have one for each band. So if you're on 15 meters, 17 meters, 20 meters, 40 meters, 80 meters, whatever. You have to have a different antenna. They're loaded up. The coils are different on each antenna for that particular band. But I use a, here we go, God forbid, I use a Fire Stick CB antenna mount. That's right, CB antenna mount. It's a standard thread, standard, I think they're 5/8 studs with a, I can't remember the thread count, but it's a standard CB antenna mount. It's called a Fire Stick mount, and then we just plug the ham stick antennas into it.
and works just absolutely great. I've had a lot of fun with it. The mounts probably $25. The ham sticks are I think about anywhere from $12 to $18 per antenna. You know, I've got one for each band, but a lot of fun and really easy to set up on a vehicle, especially a pickup truck or in my case an SUV. With the Fire Stick mount, I have a fender mount that I screwed in or bolted to the inside of the fender, and it sticks up in between the fender and the hood. It's got plenty of clearance so it doesn't scratch or paint there. And then just screw in the ham stick, and off you go with 100 watts mobile.
Hello, Roger, that Glenn. Hey, thanks so much, because you are the ham stick that I know. So, anyway, this is Kilo Golf 7, Sierra Juliet Romeo. I'm going to clear out of here. And 7331, talk to you on the radio. Merry Christmas.
Comment.
Yeah, I've been called a lot of things. Hamstick isn't one.
Dipstick was one, I think, but not a ham stick.
Okay, well, go ahead with the comments, Sean.
Yeah, you know, this is right down the ball game where I am. I have a little shorty mag mount that I put on top of the cab of my pickup truck. And it works for the 2-meter 440, but I also have the same mount and use a 20-meter and a 40-meter ham stick that I can switch back and forth on a mount that I have a rack that goes into the stake holes in the back on my pickup truck. The last time I was headed up to Spokane, you get into the area on I-90 around Sprague Lake area, and it's dead man's zone. You can't get into the 3-6 or the 3-8. And I was trying to get in there and let everybody know I was heading into town, and I couldn't do it, so I switched over to the HF side with my 20-meter stick, and I checked into the Maritime Net in Florida with a 5x9 both directions. Just like I was talking on the local repeater. That's what's fun about HF Mobile. The closer I got into town, then I was able to use the mag mount on top of the top of the roof and get into probably the 3-6. I can't remember now. It's kind of a hit and miss on both of them out there. But, yeah, with an HF ham stick, those are just fantastic antennas. They work super fine. I was using my ICOM 7000. And I wasn't running full power. You just don't need to when you're out mobile like that in the flatland. You're going to hit anywhere you want to. But, yeah, I was dialing around and heard the Maritime Net out of Florida and checked right in like it was next door. So, yeah, Glenn knows the experience, and that's the reason why I have those kind of antenna setups for my HF mobile. KD7AAT.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, I love my ham stick. I think probably you... Well, first thing I'd like to mention is the one thing that I wish I would have done different with my mobile antenna is I mounted it on the driver's side. And if I was ever to do it again, mount your... Because they're pretty tall antennas. The stick itself is probably, what, 3 foot tall? And then there's probably another 3 foot, give or take, of steel whip that sticks out of the top. They're little skinny, tiny antennas, but they're really long. And I wish I would have mounted mine on the passenger side. So if you ever do think about mounting HF, especially a tall HF antenna, and you do it on one side of the truck or the other, I really suggest doing it on the passenger side. That way you can still clear most drive-through windows. If you go out to eat or stop to get a latte, I really have to plan ahead so I can take the antenna down. It only takes a second to jump out of the truck and unscrew it, throw it in the back of the truck. But sure puts a damper on stopping at McDonald's on the way home when you have a 4-foot-high hood, 3-foot-high fiberglass antenna with 3 more feet of width coming out of it.
And if it was on the passenger side, you can just kind of swing out above their little awnings a little bit and not have to take the antenna completely down. So that's the only thing I regret about my HF setup. John's made a custom deal for his where he's got a pickup truck, so he's got stake pockets, I guess, on both sides of the truck, and he drops his in there, and it's a bar that goes all the way across the bed of the truck, and his ham stick's mounted on that. And I would think that he's got a little bit more of a reflector or radial ground wave or ground plane than I do, where the antenna's kind of right on the side of my truck. He's got his in the dead center of the back of his pickup bed, so probably has a little bit better ground plane than mine does, but I've had absolutely no complaints, and I absolutely love doing HF mobile. Like I said, nothing passes the time like jumping on a few nets and making a few QSOs, and the next thing you know, you're 300 miles down the road and don't even know where the time went. All right, any other questions or comments for the ElmerNet?
GB7NUE.
WB7NUE, go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Glenn. Oh, I've been sitting here monitoring the net tonight and listening to the different questions and answers, and just wanted to say thank you for your input. But I have to tell you, the one thing that I think that these people should do before they ever install an antenna, either a mobile antenna or one in their yard, is go get a book and read about them first. And then a lot of these problems that they encounter won't even be present. But anyway, good work. Enjoyed it. And thanks for your input there. I checked in with you last week, and just checked in with you tonight to say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and thanks for what's going on. WB7NUE.
Well, thanks so much, and I agree with you. Get a book and read about the antennas. Of course, everything I do in my life seems to be absolutely backwards, so yeah, I'm more of a hands-on kind of guy. I was one of those that just memorized the questions and answers enough to get me a light technician license, and same with the general, and so on and so forth. And, just wanted the upgrade and to be able to get on HF bands, and then once I found myself in that position, I started learning why they have all those questions on the test and what the meaning was and why you need to know it. Same with antennas, too. Like I said, the first antenna I ever got just for 2 meters was a commercial, because I figured the commercials were going to be way better than anything you could build out of the garage. And I was found myself sorely mistaken, and my J-Pole outperformed my commercial Hustler antenna by far. And, many antennas later, and HF, and just I think it was just last year at the Hamfest, I won a gift certificate to the ARRL, so I bought myself a book on antennas. So here I am several years down the road, and just recently got my first antenna book. So that's the story of my life, though. Everything is backwards. Thanks so much for the input this evening. Good to hear you. And you guys are welcome for ElmerNet. I can't think of a better way to spend a snowy Wednesday night here, the eve of Christmas Eve, but doing a net. So it's been a lot of fun, and I wouldn't be here hanging out if it wasn't for all you guys. So thank you very much. All right, anything else for the net? I'll tell you, for no topics tonight, just general questions and answers to go
go past 9 o'clock is a dream come true, so sure lets us, excuse me. Sure lets me know that people are interested in the net. Always enjoy helping the newcomers along and people's questions in general as well. So thanks everyone for being here this evening. I think we'll wrap this thing up here. And wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, if I don't get a chance to talk to you between now and then. And everybody else, have a good rest of the evening. This is K1RR, your net control for this evening. 673. Have a